So what I'm going to do is open up my Kindle and open up NTI. And let's see, we're going to start the Holy Spirit's interpretation of Romans, NTI Romans chapter 1, which on the Kindle is on page 261. How is it for you guys? 261. All right. Well, here we go. This opening, which you are reading now, contains a very simple message of love. All are invited into the awareness of God, as none are to be left out. This is an important message that I ask you to be quiet and accept now. All are invited into the awareness of God, and none are to be left out. Now for me, when this was received, this felt personal. It wasn't like Holy Spirit was telling me, everyone out there is going to be invited into the awareness of God. What Holy Spirit was really telling me is, you also are going to be invited. Because I still had that unworthiness thing going on where, you know, I was willing to believe that everybody out there was going to be, but I wasn't. Right? So you also are invited into the awareness of God. You also are invited. You also are invited. And that's why he's asking me to be quiet and accept this now. Because I still perceived myself as the one person who was too unworthy to be accepted into the awareness of love. You know, just so I still needed that healed in me. And so he's asking me to be quiet and accept this message that even I am invited, right, into the awareness of God, that I am not less than everyone else. I am the Holy Spirit, and I come to you on this day to teach you and to take you further along the path with me. Until now, you are not ready for the full devotion that I will ask, but you have recognized the hint of your release, and you are ready now. And so I will teach you what you have come to learn. Together, we are blessed. Within you, there is a wish. This wish is not within anyone else, although you would rather see it there. This wish is hidden deep within your mind, hidden by layers of smoke. Now, even though Holy Spirit says this wish is not within anyone else, that doesn't mean that the person of Regina had the wish and no other person did. What this really is talking to anyone who is the reader. Yeah, it's talking to me. And it's saying, you know, you're the one with the wish, and what I don't want you to do is start thinking, well, so-and-so out there, I see her, you know, with this wish, and I see her. It wants you to stay reflected on yourself. You know, just like A Course in Miracles says, the miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. You know, Spirit is saying, everything I'm about to say now, I don't want you looking out there and finding other people. I want you looking within you. You know, this is you I'm talking about. Before we go together to look at this wish, there is something I want you to know. The wish is only a thought. It is nothing else at all. It can best be described as a curiosity that you wanted to explore. It is really nothing, nothing at all. Now again, remember when this is written, I still had a strong guilt and unworthiness in me. And so as I was receiving these words, and I could tell that Holy Spirit was about to teach me something, there was also a fear. There was this fear that Holy Spirit was now going to show me the really bad thing that I did. You know, the really bad thing that I did was about to be exposed. And so that's why Holy Spirit is saying, now we're going to go and we're going to look at this, but I want you to understand it's not really bad. It's just a thought. It was just a curiosity. It's not this really bad, you know, we often talk about the original sin. It's not the original sin. It's not a really bad thing. It's something you need to see, but it's not really bad, you know? In fact, Holy Spirit continues, I am very grateful that you have expressed your freedom and explored your wish. Now the curiosity can be let go. So not only is it not bad, but I'm grateful that you went ahead and did this. You know, I wouldn't have wanted you to repress your wish. I'm grateful that you explored your wish. So see, Holy Spirit's not judging us at all for this. I am your guide as I show you what you have learned in a daydream within the mind. Join with me in peace and detachment as we giggle at your thought in gratitude that it could be thought and let go. Again, you can see no judgment there. We're going to look at it. We're going to laugh at it. You know, what a silly idea. And then we're going to let it go. So no judgment whatsoever. And that's the setup that takes us into NTI Romans chapter 2, where we get to look at the wish. Judgment is a fantasy. It is like a game that you have played, but it means absolutely nothing at all. It is like a toy, a building block that is given structure to your curious thought. It allowed you to create alleyways and byways and to try this and to try that. But it was all within the field of fantasy, an amazing expression of curiosity, and it was never any more than that. Imagine yourself with this idea. For this was the idea that you had. What if nothing was as it is? What if I could make something completely different and make it whatever I want? What would that be like? Your idea was just a curiosity, a daydream of exploration, and really nothing at all. Since the first question asked sets up an impossible hypothesis and one that can never be true. So the first question asked was, what if nothing was as it is? And what Holy Spirit is saying, that very first question was impossible because everything is as it is. And you know, and one simple example that I use is if you have, some Play-Doh. And you say, you know, what if this wasn't, you know, Play-Doh? What if it was something else? And then you start looking at the Play-Doh and you say, what if it was a city? And you take the Play-Doh and you start forming a city. And then you say, what if there were people in my city? And you make a few little people. And then you say, what if these people were lovers? Or what if these people were fighting? But the truth is, you still only have Play-Doh, right? It's all you have. You haven't really made a city. You haven't really made people. You haven't really made love or made war, right? You have Play-Doh. And so what this is saying is there wasn't some element, you know, I'm going to use the word element. We'll call God an element, a basic element. There wasn't some element other than God to make something other than God. You know, God is like the Play-Doh. That's all there is, and that's all there ever can be. And you can't take God and turn God into something else. It's impossible. So the very first question that we asked, what if nothing was as it is an impossible hypothesis. Starting with sentence 12. But in your freedom and the innocence of your curiosity, you set out to think a little more. You needed a tool to create this experience that would allow you to explore. The building block that you made was judgment or decision, and this became a new creative force. It allowed for experience without creation, and from judgment, experience was made. So again, all we have is God, and we can't actually create something other than God. God is the only element. But we've created this, it's not really a thing, it's an idea. We've created the belief in our own ideas, which we're calling judgment. And if we believe in our own ideas, then we can have an experience that's different than the experience of God. An example of that might be if you take anything, take a particular clothing outfit that somebody might wear, and they might walk in front of you with a particular clothing outfit. One person could decide, ooh, that's a cool outfit, and they're going to have a positive experience when they look at it. Another person could decide, that's a ridiculous outfit. Why do kids like dress like that today? And they're going to have a negative experience, both people looking at the same outfit, right? So basically, the ability to have ideas and to believe our ideas or to value our ideas creates experience. If we decide something is fearful, we have an experience of fear. If we decide that we hate something or someone, we have an experience of hate. We decide that we love someone or something, we have this temporary experience, an emotional experience that we call love. So the ability to have ideas and to make decisions regarding those ideas, which is judgment, allows us to have experience. So that's what was kind of made, except it's not really made because it's all just thought. It's all just ideas. But that's what was kind of made to give us the ability to begin to experience something other than God. Verses 5 to 11. With judgment made to build experience, you needed something to judge. You needed a place to start making this experience of something different than it is. So you took what you had, an idea in the mind, and you applied judgment to that. So basically what this is saying is we had that original idea, what if everything wasn't as it is, and we looked at that with the ability to believe our own ideas, and we said, that's a good question. Instead of the idea that's an impossible question, everything is as it is, we said, that's a good question. That was our first judgment. That's a worthwhile question. When judgment was applied, something new was made, so your experience began immediately. Suddenly before you were two options set. For the first time ever, you had a decision to make. Your curiosity was nothing and did not mean a thing, so nothing at all had changed. This was an option given to consider, and it offered the opportunity to laugh. But the second was different and led deeper into the game. It was an opportunity to believe that the idea had become so, and nothing is as it was. So again, we have the question, what if everything isn't as it is? That's a worthwhile question. And then boom, two options. The first option telling us everything is as it is, nothing's changed. The second option saying, now that you've done this, everything is different and it will never be the same again. Two options. We've never had two options before. This is the creation of duality. And in fact, the option that says everything still is as it is, that's what we call Holy Spirit. And this is what Holy Spirit is still trying to teach us. The option that says, now everything's different and it's never going to be the same again, that's ego, right? So basically, ego and Holy Spirit as thought systems were created, and now for the first time ever we have a choice. It says, starting with sentence 11, struck with this second option, you became engrossed by it and you tossed the first option aside. Faced with reality and the option of fantasy, you chose to step into fantasy. So, So we're like, so what's different? What does this mean? We became totally, we placed our attention, our awareness here. And basically, you go where you place your attention and your awareness. And that's still true today. You go where you place your attention and your awareness. So even though, you know, the Holy Spirit is here, we kind of toss the Holy Spirit way into the background. And we brought the ego into the foreground by placing all of our attention there and wanting to know more about how things have changed and what we can do and all of this, right? It was at this point that you began to forget and you practiced the game of judgment again. But this time, in error, you judged yourself for what was not true, and you believed your judgment of yourself. So again, go ahead. Sin. Yeah, exactly. All of our attention is here. You know, this has now been tossed kind of in the background. All of our attention is here. And then this thought enters, kind of like a, here's the oh shit. Oh shit, what have I done? I've done something wrong, you know? Everything's different. Nothing is as it was. You know, I've done something wrong. And this is a self-judgment. Again, we still only have Play-Doh here. We still only have the element of God. In fact, we're only playing with ideas and believing our own ideas. That's all we're doing. Nothing has changed, but we're forgetting that. We're going so deep into this idea that we're forgetting what is true. This is how you seem to step into a script and lose your way out again. But it is just a script and nothing more at all. There is nothing at all to fear. Now, the script isn't talking about a script like, you know, like a specific written script that now we're going to have a Priscilla character and she's going to do this, and now we're going to have a Dave character and he's going to do this. It's not talking about that level of script yet. It's talking about the level of script that's really going to be taught later in Ephesians, which is more the idea of what I think I'm going to perceive. What I perceive, I'm going to experience. And what I experience, I'm going to think about. And then it just keeps going. What I think, I perceive. What I perceive, I experience. What I experience, I think. And it just keeps going and going and going. And it gets this illusion, it's like an illusion-making script that just keeps pumping out illusory stories. So if I think I've done something really, really bad, I'm going to experience this feeling that I've done something really, really bad, right? I'm going to then worry about, oh my gosh, I've done something really, really bad, and more of that is going to come out of me, right? It's kind of like a creative script. So this script is now running because of the attention we've given to this idea. And then the judgment we've made on ourselves for giving attention to this idea. And now we're kind of going, you know, it's the same thing people do now. It's not any different than, because it's, you know, we're still the same actually. People go into spiral down experiences. An idea gets stuck in their head. It could be anything. You know, it could be the idea, I shouldn't have disrespected my mom. I'm a really bad son or a really bad daughter because I disrespected my mom. And they start thinking about this. And pretty soon, you know, some people end up in very, very low places because they just spiral down. So it's that same idea. It's letting an idea get hooked, believing your own idea, and then just falling it as deep as it will take you. So we see that even in our human experience today. So that's what this is talking about. Verses 12 to 16. Judgment is the tool that built the world, and judgment keeps the experience alive. Again, judgment here really means decision-making, believing my own ideas. Judgment is the tool that built the world, and judgment keeps the experience alive. But judgment came from nothing but an impossible idea and the desire to think about it some more. All judgment is fantasy. Judgment spins fantasy. Judgment is a way to explore. It is a game, a folly, and nothing more. It has no purpose and makes nothing real. Judgment is a web of meaningless thoughts given only the power of fantasy and absolutely nothing more. So again, the whole error is just the error of believing our own ideas. It's that simple. And then the more we will believe our own ideas, it seems like the web becomes very, very thick. But if you know that this is the primary error, then you also understand why spiritual teachers teach over and over again, don't believe your thoughts. If the primary error is believing your own ideas, well, the undoing of that is not believing your own ideas, right? One takes you in and one takes you out. It's like simple. The problem is that our ideas have become now what appears to be form, what appears to be real, and we seem to have put ourselves in some kind of a trap where the manifestation of our ideas is proving that our ideas are true. And so now we have this issue where I believe, you know, a certain type of person is bad, for example, maybe a certain race or a certain neighborhood or whatever, and then I turn on the news and there they are being bad again, and you know, everything's proving me right. Everything I believe I'm going to find in the world. And so unless I feel an inner calling to awaken, most of us don't have any real incentive to stop believing our thoughts, because the world is constantly proving to us that we're right, and we can argue all day long that we're right. The only thing that I know about that eventually causes people to start taking those steps to stop believing their thoughts in spite of evidence is the desire to awaken. When you want that more than you want whatever this experience is, then even though there's evidence that you're right, you start choosing to not believe your thoughts anyway. Because believing our thoughts is what got us here, and not believing our thoughts is what awakens us to truth.
Pain can also do that too.
Pain, if you suffer enough.
If there's an issue and it comes into our life in some way that causes this pain, so like the racial issue, and we have people move in next door that are of the ethnic persuasion that we're
don't afraid of, yes.
Then we have to deal with that somehow.
Yes. Yes, and so we start being willing to see differently to get out of the pain. Okay, so two reasons then. Wanting to get out of pain or wanting to awaken. So you may think of another reason why we stop believing our thoughts? Maybe that's it. So, starting with verses 17 to 24. The game you have made to test your curiosity is a game with rules and options. This gives you the ability to continue to make judgments and to continue to play the game. The rules and options are important for another reason as well. The game that you play is a game of guilt and innocence, right and wrong, good and evil. To play this game in this way, there must be rules and options, and there needs to be winners and losers. So again, you know, it's a complicated game. But it's a complicated game so that I can continue making judgments, making decisions all of the time. Which outfits are good, which outfits are bad, which racial groups or religions are good, which racial groups or religions are bad, which political party is good, which political party is bad, and I just get to continue having ideas and believing ideas. And one thing that's really interesting about having a teenager who fortunately can't hear me right now, is that you watch teenagers make these decisions about what they're going to believe, and you know that they're making them up, but they soon forget that they make them up. You know, somewhere in high school, you know, unless they learned it, maybe if they learned it from their parents, they don't have to, but see, I'm not teaching her this stuff. I'm not teaching her whether we're Democrat or Republican, or I'm not teaching her that stuff. But all the kids at school, they all have these identifications, right? So she's like making them up. She's deciding she's, you know, Democrat. She's deciding she's a Broncos fan. She's deciding she's, you know, she's like making all this stuff up. Well, that's what we all do at some point. Or we learn it and we believe what we're taught. It's the same thing. You know, we're making up all of these things because it allows us this ability to play this game. And as long as we believe our thoughts, if I believe I'm a Republican, I really believe it, I've now identified with it, then I get pissed as hell sometimes at Democrats, don't I? Right? But guess what? I'm not a Republican. You know? I'm not a Democrat. That's not what we are. These are ideas that we've identified with and believed. And they're nothing more than that. That's the same thing with religion. You know, I can identify with a particular religion, and look how religion causes war based on identification, right? Starting with sentence 6. This is a game that lets you express the guilt you feel for playing the game while mitigating your feeling of guilt at the same time. In this way, the game is an attempt to be gentle with yourself. It is an expression of love. You believe that you are guilty based on your own judgment of yourself for the idea and the game that you made, but you also know to be gentle with yourself. So both are in the game that you play. Now, one thing that we do is we project our guilt. So instead of me, you know, really dealing with how guilty I think I am or how unworthy I think I am, you know, I put on some mask. The Course calls it the mask of innocence. You know, I become successful in the business world, and I'm proud of my success in the business world, and then I come across someone else who isn't successful in the business world, maybe a 40-year-old kid that's still living with his mom and never became anything, right? And I call him the bum. I'm the good one, he's the bum, right? Now, what this is saying is the ability to project is actually being gentle with ourselves. So this isn't even saying that projection is bad. Now, projection keeps the game alive, and at some point, if we want to awaken, we have to stop that practice of projection. But this is saying having so many of us and so many of stories and the ability for me to not like you and you to not like me keeps all of us from having to suffer the pain of the guilt and unworthiness and the shame that we feel. So, you know, it allows us to be gentle with ourselves, this ability to have many of us instead of one of us, so that we can kind of shoot the blame out there instead of having to experience it. Until, of course, we feel mature and ready to let go of it, right? Verses 25 to 27. However, the game that you play has become like a trap. For within the rules and the options, the good and the evil, the building block of judgment continues to be made. As your guilt is expressed with your desire to be gentle, the web of belief grows dense. That which is fantasy seems to be real, its drama seems to be life. So again, the more that I play I'm the successful one, the more I decide I'm going to be. I even remember as a kid, because I did as a teenager, I had a strong conscious sense of unworthiness. It was very conscious. I really felt like the most unworthy person. Everybody else had a talent or a beauty or something. I had nothing. But I decided I couldn't live like that. And I remember deciding that I was going to do things that would make me more worthy. I was going to be a traveler. I was going to somehow be successful in a career. I was going to own a home, a well-decorated home. I was going to, you know, be a parent. And when I had these things, I would be worthy. And then I sat out in my life to acquire these things. And as I acquired these things, my unworthiness went from a conscious experience to be stuffed way, way down. It wasn't healed. It was now underneath all of these things. And this is why there was stress in my life, because I had built this mask, and now I had to keep the mask in place. So what this is saying is, as we play this game of trying to be gentle with ourselves, to not feel our guilt, whether we're doing it by projecting on others or while we're doing it by building a mask or whatever, all that happens is we go deeper into the fantasy. Right? All that happens is we go further and further and further away from truth. Verses 28 to 29. This is how you've seemed to become that which you aren't at all. None of it is true, none of it is you, and yet you believe it is so. It is this we must look at, and this we must let go, because it is false and only believed to be true. So each of us have built a complete ego personality, not only for ourselves, but for everyone else, right? We've each developed an opinion of the world, of what the world is, of what's right in the world, of what's wrong in the world, of what should change in the world, of how things should be, of how things shouldn't be. We've got this complex system of ideas that we've built And none of it's true. None of it's true. We've just moved so far away from who we are that most of us don't even have the slightest recollection. Unless we've already started the undoing process, then some of that recollection of who we are begins to come back. But the average person in the world doesn't have the slightest recognition of what our reality is. And that's how thick this web has been woven. And it's nothing but ideas believed. What we are has never changed. Right? What we are has never changed. There's just all of these ideas believed that make it seem that way. And of course, we have all of the emotional experience to go along with what we believe, as well as all the seeming form manifestation. So, that's NTI Romans chapter 1 and chapter 2. And probably, you know, a good assignment for the week would, I mean, this is an assignment that we've kind of had before, but it's probably a good time to visit it. Revisit it. A good assignment for the week would probably just to start noticing when you can, when it pops up, just notice it. When you're making decisions about something to believe, you know, like it could be anything. You could decide, you know, she's rude, right? You could decide to believe that about a person. She's rude. You could decide to believe he's stupid. You know, just anything at all. Notice when you are deciding to believe your own ideas. And just notice that. When are you making these judgments and believing them? And you don't have to do anything else but notice. We want to kind of start to see that what NTI is telling us is true. And this isn't the story of a tiny mad idea that happened billions of years ago. This is a story of a tiny mad idea that's alive like a virus in us now. And we're still doing it all the time, and that's the problem. Right? It's happening right now. So what I'm going to do now is go ahead and just turn off the recorder. I'm going to walk over to Jasmine and get a drink of water, and then we can have a bit of silence, and then we'll talk about this.
I just have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
It seems to me that if I just notice it, don't do anything but notice it, I'm not really.
Well, okay, that's a good question. I'm going to repeat that just in case it wasn't heard on the recording, because that's a good question. She said, it seems to me, that, thank you, Jasmine, it seems to me that if I just notice and I don't do anything but notice it, I'm not doing anything. The truth is, because what you are is still true, your awareness is like light, or your awareness is holy, or your awareness is God. There's a wisdom in your awareness that is not an intellectual thinking mind wisdom. It's a different kind of wisdom. And if you start to just notice things, just looking at them, it's like shining light on them. And the more you just look, just notice, pretty soon you will naturally begin to decide not to believe your own judgments. You know, so like right now you may have a thought, oh, he's stupid, and you just believe it. Oh, he's stupid. Now from now on, he's stupid. If you just notice that now at this point, you notice it, what happens one day is a thought comes into the mind, oh, she's an idiot, and then you're like, what? You know, you're like, it's just like, what? You know, she's not an idiot, you know. I mean, the thought still shows up, but the belief doesn't go to it. And that happens naturally as you place your awareness on it. The ego lives in darkness. By darkness, it means by you not being aware. So if you're running around deciding that people are stupid, people are rude, people are whatever, and you're not noticing it, guess what? All those beliefs are just taking. But if you start noticing, ah, look, pretty soon it just doesn't take anymore. And again, it seems to be a natural process. You didn't really do anything but notice. But that's all it took. Okay? Makes sense. All right, good. Now I'll stop the recorder.